The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
This is Bill Press and Friends on the District Productive Network.
First question is, should Democrats go to the inauguration at all? More and more of them are saying they will not, following the lead of Congressman John Lewis of Georgia. So far, 22 Democrats have said they will not attend. Peter, we ought to get up the list, should have asked you earlier, of all the Democrats and give them some credit. I know Maxine Waters is on that list, Mark Takano from California, Rahul Grijalva from Arizona. I won't try to remember all of them. But those 22 have said, nope, they've got more important things to do. They are not going to give Donald Trump the credit of sitting there and watching him sworn into office as if their presence might indicate that they support him and his policies. So they're staying home. My question to you, tell us on Twitter, at BP Show, do you think they're doing the right thing? Absolutely, yes. Should they go to this inauguration? I would say hell no. And I'm not going either. In fact, we were invited, as we are every inauguration, to be up there with the media in the stands. And we declined. We declined for a very good reason.
Pass.
Again, pass.
No,
right.
Thanks.
No, we wanted nothing to do with Donald Trump's inauguration, the man who is totally unqualified to be president of the United States, totally unfit to be president of the United States, who is against everything that we believe in, who wants to undo everything we have accomplished, who will be a monumental embarrassment to this nation around the world. Why should we be any part of seeing him sworn into office? It's going to be a train wreck, his entire administration. And in my judgment, to attend is to pretend that you accept him as, well, no, I don't want to go too far. I mean, he will be the president. But to attend is to pretend that he deserves to be president of the United States. To attend is to add legitimacy to his presidency. So I believe the best thing to do is what so many of these Democrats have done, is not to be a hypocrite, stand up for what you believe, and stay home or go out and do a public service, some public service work at a homeless shelter or something. Do anything but attend Donald Trump's administration. Do we have a...
Yeah, well, there's a long list. But there's a couple names of people, yeah, that you will recognize who have done the show or friends of the show. Maxine Waters.
Yes.
Earl Blumenauer.
Yep.
Jared Huffman. Luis Gutierrez.
Jared Huffman, who's my congressman.
Your congressman,
California.
That's right. Luis Gutierrez from Illinois. Right. Barbara Lee. John Conyers won't be there. Ted Lieu, who we just had on the show not that long ago.
Yep. Yep.
Mark Takano, you mentioned. Mark Pocan, who was just here last week. He's not going.
He was just here Thursday.
And yeah, he said he was planning on going, but then the most recent Russia information was enough for him to actually question whether or not he is a legitimate president. And, of course, John Lewis is not going to go.
Right.
Famously not going to go.
Right, right. Yeah, we're going to get to that in just a minute here. So, first question, attend the inauguration, yes or no? Absolutely not. Second question, what do we do instead? I got to tell you, I'm excited because we're seeing Democrats, we're seeing progressives really stand up and start what I think has got to be our MO for the next 4 years, which is a protest a day. Just keep, remember, I've said this before, what are we going to do? Fight back. I told you about my little grandson asking, Granddad, how are we going to survive Donald Trump? Fight back is what I told him every day, and it's already started. The protest movements are growing nationwide. Last Saturday, Reverend Al Sharpton and the National Action Network led a big rally here in near the Martin Luther King Memorial for Martin Luther King weekend, protesting, again, the policies of Donald Trump and calling on Democrats in Congress to get some backbone. In fact, here is the Reverend Al down there on I did his show on MSNBC yesterday morning, Politics Nation. And here he is on Saturday exhorting the Democrats to stand up and fight back.
We come to say to the Democrats in the Senate and in the House and into the moderate Republicans to get some backbone, get some guts.
Yeah, get some guts, says the Reverend Al Sharpton. That was Saturday. On Sunday, just yesterday, Democrats rallied nationwide, led by Bernie Sanders, who's a new outreach chair of the Democrats in the Senate, in some 40 different cities nationwide, 40 rallies in 40 different cities nationwide to protect Obamacare and to save Obamacare out in the chant. Here's the chant out in Warren,
save
Michigan.
Our healthcare. Save our health care. Save our health care. Save our health care.
Some 8,000 people there for Bernie Sanders and Chuck Schumer and Congress and Senator Debbie Stabenow in Warren, Michigan. Again, one of 40 rallies held yesterday around the country. This Thursday at the Trump International Hotel, not a Trump Tower, Trump International Hotel in New York, Mayor de Blasio is going to lead a great big protest in front of the hotel. And next Saturday is the big Women's March on Washington. I told you we've got 10 people camping out at our house who've come from California for this big march. Carol and I will be there as well. And to give you some sign of what is going on with that march, the Washington Post reports, so there are various places around the city where tour buses come in and they can park. One of the big places is RFK Stadium. Not the only one, but that's the number one spot. So far, and here's Donald Trump, remember, who says his inauguration is so popular that you cannot buy a gown in Washington, D.C. anymore because all the gowns are sold out, which the head of every store chain has said, that's not true.
That's not true.
They're full of gowns. They got tons of gowns left everywhere, you know, whether it's Nordstrom's or Macy's or whatever. I walk through Macy's on my way to the Metro almost every day. They got gowns on the first floor. They got models around all over with gowns, right? So that's not true. And then he says there's going to be the biggest crowd ever in history at his inauguration. Well, put this in context. The Washington, D.C. police report that for the inauguration, they have reservations to park 393 buses.
It's a lot of buses.
A lot of buses. For the march on the Women's March in Washington the next day, they have reservations to park 1,200 buses.
Wow.
Three times as many, actually, coming buses.
That's remarkable.
For the inauguration. And there's a story in the New York Times this morning about a new app called Skedaddle, which is just to hook people up with buses that are going where they want to go.
Oh, interesting.
These guys just started this app, and the app is like busted with so many people using this
no
new
kidding.
App, Skedaddle.
That's
to get
really
to
cool.
Washington for it. Isn't that cool? So I'd say that is a good start, a good sign that people are now ready to. We've mourned long enough, right? Now it's a fight back, and the protests start, and just a wave of protests, and keep them going every day. You hear us often talk about the fact that we are sponsored by Amalgamated Bank, amalgamatedbank.com. And Keith Mestridge is the CEO and the president of Amalgamated Bank, good friend who joins us in studio on a Martin Luther King Day. So, Keith, I want to ask you, here we are, transition into a new administration. What Donald Trump inherits from Barack Obama in terms of the economy, a little different from what Barack Obama inherited from George W. Bush?
I wouldn't say a little. Let's go back to 2009 and that January morning. We had just come off almost the near collapse of the international economic system. The country had been through crisis. GM and Chrysler were on the verge of failure. The country had to bail out all the big banks. Unemployment was double digit. Nobody knew what was going to happen. We were almost in a free fall. Bush and his administration had stabilized things, but there was no plan for what we were going to do going forward. And President Obama inherited a near crisis. And actually, it's taken a while, but has handled it masterfully, right? We didn't fall into collapse. We didn't go into another depression. In fact, just the opposite. We've had 8 years of growing employment over that time. Not as fast as people wanted, but growing employment over mm-hmm. time. Our economy is the strongest economy in the world right now. There is no other place for people to invest in this country or in this world. Everybody looks to America. Unemployment's under 5%. We have growth. Consumer confidence is at an all-time high. Wages are starting to increase. And Donald Trump kind of comes in without – he says there's all these problems. He says America is on the verge of collapse. And it's just garbage. It's not. The American economy is very, very strong. And there's ways to keep it going and building stronger, and maybe we'll do that. But Donald Trump inherits a beautiful situation in which to take over the presidency of the United States, and he's going to take all the credit for all the things that Barack Obama has set up and has put us in the position to do.
I was trying to remember the name of it that we gave it, but President Obama, George Bush, in bailing out Wall Street, right? There was that program.
TARP program.
Bush had done half of TARP, and President Obama had to do the. Yeah. Was he right to do the second half of TARP?
I think so. I mean, people can quibble with what's happened to the banks in this country. They probably are too big. I think that they're too big. I think that they need to be broken up. But Obama had to deal with the situation he was dealt with. And if he had let the banks collapse at that time, it would have really been a tragedy in this country. And if he had let GM and Chrysler collapse, that would have been a real crisis. And we had insurance companies, and who knows what would have happened other than
that.
So
the next thing was bailing out the auto industry, which, as we recall, was he didn't get any Republican support for that.
I don't think there was a single Republican vote for the bailout of the auto industry.
In fact, Mitt Romney was notoriously wrote in that op-ed that we should just let it die.
Yeah.
We should just let them
right,
die.
Right.
Which has turned out to be a huge success. They're selling more cars than ever before and making better cars.
And isn't it irony that now the state of Michigan voted the way they voted in this election? So
right.
We'll see what happens.
And the stimulus, looking back, the stimulus worked?
It worked. You know my position on this. It wasn't nearly enough, and it wasn't sustainable. Another thing that didn't get a single Republican vote in the Congress.
Right.
The sort of meager stimulus that we had that injected, real stimulus into the economy and was part of what the recovery was. That recovery could have been so much quicker if Republicans in Congress had not been so intransigent in blocking additional stimulus from happening, so that we could have made smart investments in infrastructure. We kept interest rates down. We cut tax. I mean, Barack Obama cut taxes for people across the board. These are all stimulus things that that happened. Donald Trump's going to cut taxes. I haven't heard of a single progressive component of his tax structure. It's tax cuts for the rich and tax cuts for big corporations and tax cuts for a bunch of other people at the top end of the scale. But we did all the things we needed to do. We just needed to do more.
But isn't this sort of good news, bad news? The good news is that we're all benefiting from, as you say, a robust economy now. We're back. We're going strong. Maybe the bad news is that unlike President Obama, Donald Trump won't have to worry so much about rebuilding the economy, and he'll be able to do other stuff, which is not necessarily all good. I mean, President Obama had to focus on that.
He did. And somehow,
and
not
so
only
there were
did
other
that,
stuff like immigration reform or other things he might have wanted to do, which he couldn't do at the time.
But we figured out how to extend health care to millions more people in the country.
Right.
We figured
out
how to actually have a serious conversation about climate change. And we got out of a couple of wars. And we did a few things in the last 8 years, and we restored, I think, confidence in the global community that America was a leader. And I think all that's really in danger right now.
Right.
You talk about when the President Obama took office, we were sort of at a brink, right? We had sort of stopped the bleeding, and the next moves were crucial. We could have gone either way. And so now you look at where we are, you talk about the strength that we have, but how I guess, stable is that strength. Could we go off in another direction if Donald Trump sort of catches a wild hare and decides to completely screw things up?
So, you know, I mean, global markets and people, what leads to a lack of confidence is uncertainty and unpredictability.
That is the
yeah. world that we are in. First of all, none of us sitting here today know what the economic agenda of the new president is going to be. We just don't know.
True.
I mean, we know there's going to be a tax cut. We have no idea what it's going to look like. And this town will make it look like something that we'll figure out 2 or 3 months after it's passed what actually happened to us.
Because he's gone from saying, I'm going to raise taxes on my friends on Wall Street. They're not going to like it. To now he's saying we're going to cut taxes for the wealthiest of Americans.
Well,
right?
And those guys in Wall Street are all going to run the economy, as far as I can tell. So they're going to be in this. So we're going to get a tax cut. It is not going to be just, you know, stimulus that happens from a tax cut. If you're going to get stimulus from a tax cut, you have to apply it across the board. We don't need to do that right now. I mean, that's the key thing. There's no reason to actually have a tax cut right now. If we want to keep the stimulus rolling, let's keep taxes where they are and invest that mm-hmm. money in our economy and in building things and rebuilding the crumbling infrastructure that we have. There are spending components of stimulus that can actually happen that I don't hear anything. The whole talk about infrastructure is kind of just frittered away. We don't really talk about it anymore. And,
right.
And who knows what he's going to do.
Hey, everybody. This is Bill Press. Thanks for listening to the Bill Press and Friends podcast. And now, do yourself a favor. If you haven't already done so, subscribe to the show on iTunes. Here's what you do. Just search for The Bill Press Show. Then you can take us with you and listen in anywhere you go. And you'll get new shows from us as soon as they're posted. And one more thing. If you really enjoy Bill Press and Friends, please help us grow by telling a friend, writing a review, and giving us a rating on iTunes. It's so great to have you on board. Many thanks.
Zach Carter here from the Huffington Post. Donald Trump, at his news conference last week, I almost fell off my chair, said, our next target, you know, we brought the auto executives in line. Now we're going to go after Big Pharma. I said, wait, is that Bernie speaking? I mean, is he serious? And he told the Washington Post, too, when he talked about Obamacare, that part of his plan is going to be reining in the pharmaceutical companies and insisting that we have a right to negotiate for lower drug prices, which God knows Democrats have been saying for decades.
They've been saying it, and then they've been sort of shrugging it off. And part of the legislative deal for Obamacare, I mean, if you really press people in the administration about this, they say, well, look, we had to cut a deal with Big Pharma or we never would have gotten it passed. I don't know if that's true, but they did cut a deal with Big Pharma, and it did pass.
Let me tell you something. I wrote a book about it called Buyer's Remorse. Yeah, no, that deal was done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom Daschle admits that he wasn't part of that. That's what happened. They cut a deal with pharma.
Yeah. And look, so throughout the administration, you know, all 8 years, not just, you know, at you know, Health and Human Services, but the State Department, you know, the Patent and Trademark Office, every division of the federal government that's under the executive's control has been backing Big Pharma since that deal. So, you know, they have John Kerry going to India and trying to get them not to have as robust a generic drugs industry because they want to keep prescription drugs more expensive all over the world. That's been a big mistake, I think, policy-wise for Democrats. It definitely hurts people in the United States. It also hurts people in the developing world where drugs are really expensive. And it leaves them vulnerable to this kind of attack. I mean, Donald Trump is basically right about the power that Big Pharma has. And progressive Democrats, Bernie Sanders, have been saying that for years. I talked to Bernie after the press conference, and he said, look, sometimes Trump copies me. I don't know if he got this from me, but I've been saying that pharma's getting away from murder for years. And he said they're literally committing murder because people die when they can't afford their drugs. You know, if Trump goes after a few of these populist issues and just goes really hard, he's going to have a record that he can defend saying, look, I actually did look out for you, even if he does all of these other terrible things on the side, even if the terrible things are the major thrust of his sort of policy campaign. Democrats have left themselves vulnerable to this. They didn't have to do it, and who knows what's going to happen? I mean, when these bills come up to rein in Big Pharma, what are they going to do? We saw, you know, one potential preview of that this week, and I don't know if it looked good for Democrats.
And it's still the fact that the federal government, which buys more, the biggest customer for pharmaceutical drugs in the world,
yeah.
right? The U.S. government?
Yeah, Medicare.
Medicare, just, yeah. And we cannot negotiate lower drug prices.
It's baked into the Medicare Part D law that George W. Bush signed in 2003, maybe 2004. You just can't negotiate. And look, there are all sorts of things that, that make prescription
and
drugs
that
expensive.
And that continued under Obamacare. Was not changed.
Right. Okay. They just left it there.
Buying drugs from Canada.
It would. It is cheaper. People are already doing it. There are several states that have legalized it. In Canada, they can negotiate with drug companies. So they have lower prices. So if you buy from a Canadian pharmacy, it's less expensive.
But is it illegal for Americans to do so? Or
at the federal level, yes.
At the federal level?
Mm-hmm. So several states have,
could not.
Well, no, just you personally. It's a violation of federal law to buy from a Canadian pharmacy.
Whoops.
It's not a violation of state law in some states. There are several states that have done this. And so for a lot of individuals, it is cheaper. Now, economists dispute whether this is something that would be that would save a whole lot of money for the entire country because there's so many people in the United States. There are only so many drugs in Canada. I think the CBO did an estimate about 10 years ago. They said it would lower prices overall by, 1% or something. That's like $4 billion a year. You know, $4 billion here, $4 billion there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money. And the pharmaceutical lobby has aggressively opposed this for a reason. They think that this is something that will ultimately hurt their bottom line. But we saw a vote on this. Bernie Sanders put a bill on an amendment in the sort of budget resolution process this week calling for reimportation from Canada. And it failed.
But this is one of the areas where you would think that Donald Trump could make common cause with Democrats. You talk about Chuck Schumer and Bernie Sanders, unlikely bedfellows. You might see Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders together if he's serious about going after big pharma.
Oh yeah, but look what happened at the vote. I mean, 12 Democrats ended up cutting or 13 Democrats, I'm sorry, ended up voting with the overwhelming majority of Republicans to kill that bill. 12 Republicans came over and voted with the Democrats. So you can't just blame that on Republicans. There were 13 Democrats. Cory Booker is one of the most prominent ones who just said, look, even though this is largely a symbolic vote, we're going to take the symbolic vote for Big Pharma.
You mean the great populist presidential candidate for 2020, Cory Booker?
Our savior, Democrat savior.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you look at the states that these guys came from who voted against this, it's Washington State, it's Philadelphia. Philadelphia is where the pharmaceutical industry is based, but it's Pennsylvania, it's Delaware, it's New Jersey. It's states where the pharmaceutical industry is heavily concentrated. And the statements that these guys give, like to a person, is, well, look, we're really worried about drug safety and the quality of the drugs that are coming in from Canada. And, the left-wing radical Tim Pawlenty, who's former governor of Minnesota.
Former presidential candidate for the Republicans.
Current bank lobbyist, Republican, diehard Republican, wanted to do a drug importation from Canada bill when he was the governor of Minnesota because he wanted to save money, right, for his state, wanted to save money for his constituents. And the pharmaceutical lobby came back with the exact same line. Look, we don't know if these drugs from Canada are safe. And he just said, show me the dead Canadians. Where are the dead Canadians? Literally what he said verbatim.
Yeah. They're the same drugs.
Yeah.
Aren't they? I mean, they're the very same drugs.
No, they're made in the exact same plant that are sold here are. Sometimes they have the same packaging with a little bit of, the fine print is different because you have to have different disclosures in Canada than you do in the United States.
It is so BS, this whole thing. Yeah.
It's a joke. But look, importing from Canada is not going to fix the problems with prescription drugs alone. But it's a step in the right direction, and the pharmaceutical lobby opposes it for a reason. And when Democrats go and say, hey, I'm going to side with Big Pharma against Donald Trump, this is a bad look for the Democratic Party.
Lots going on. Ben Newkirk from The Atlantic, staff writer for the Atlantic, on top of all of it, and kind enough on a Martin Luther King Day to come in and join us. Hello, Ben. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Everything good?
Yeah, it's going well.
All right. So I want to talk to you first about John Lewis. John Lewis surprised a lot of people yesterday with a very bold statement on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd when he was asked why he does not plan to attend the inauguration on Friday. Here's Congressman Lewis.
I don't see this president-elect as a legitimate president.
I don't see this president-elect as a legitimate president. Is that going too far?
It's definitely outside of convention, but I think it's an extraordinary time. And it's not like he doesn't have some sort of evidence to back up the claim. So,
evidence being?
Well, he's basing it on the intelligence reports that lots of people are vouching for. And I think it's an assessment of his that Russians did play a role in the election, that there was, it doesn't even have to involve Russians. There was actually mass voter disenfranchisement among African-American voters. And this is something I think John Lewis knows a lot about. And that alone could actually, I think, support and buoy a claim on president not being a legitimate president.
Is this in any way, do you think, payback for Donald Trump's questioning the legitimacy of Barack Obama's presidency?
It seems that people have suddenly forgotten about that, which is hilarious. You know, this is out of bounds. And it's like, well, the guy made his name in politics attacking the legitimacy of President Obama, which is just, you know, it's...
Even into his own presidential campaign,
right.
Donald Trump would still not accept until maybe a year ago or so. I mean, very, very recently, mm-hmm. that he finally said, okay, he would accept him as a legitimate president.
Yeah, finally. And I mean, you just look at that and the history of attacks on President Obama. When I think there was polls right after the election when people thought that Acorn won Obama the election. If we remember that was a real thing. And that was a real thing pushed by lots of Republicans.
And all the Obama phones, remember? The
Obama phones.
Just giving away Obama phones for people to vote for him.
There's always been an air of questioning the legitimacy of Obama's presidency. And it's... I think if you want to point to what climate gave us this attack, it's that climate directly.
Right.
Yeah.
So we know what Donald Trump's response was, right? Not to say John Lewis is wrong, I won the electoral vote, but to personally attack John Lewis, as he does anybody who dares criticize him in any way, saying that John Lewis was all talk and no action. Donald Trump finally going over the line, finally out of bounds?
Well, he's been out of bounds, but this is to say John Lewis is a person who's all talk, who person who is known for being beaten, for putting his body on the line.
Almost gave his life.
Almost gave his life.
On the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
You read his, and not just there, you read march, the graphic novel, multiple times his life was in danger. I think if anybody should... get a pass for, you know, for action over words, it's John Lewis. And John Lewis is a person, I think, you know, he, at least until this week, did seem out of bounds to those type of attacks, but here we are.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was reminded, too, that it wasn't, of course, his historic past in civil rights, where he rightly is considered one of the real legends, icons, heroes of the civil rights movement, still alive today. But it was just a year or so ago when he led the Democrats to a sit-in on the House floor because Republicans wouldn't take a look at any gun safety legislation after Charleston.
Yeah, and you look at the voices who are among elected Democrats who are talking about voter suppression. Lewis's name always pops up.
Yep.
He's always there talking about the things that he's always been talking about. And to say, you know... He put forward one of the last pieces of legislation to ever hit the congressional floor on environmental justice. this is somebody who has done things, a lot of things, and I think, you know, President Trump will be lucky to ever have a record that matches just Lewis's congressional record.
Well, yeah.
And you know what I love? You know what I love is John Lewis is still out there stirring the pot, and when he does, he'll talk about it. He talks about it. He calls it good trouble. That's good trouble. I'm getting into good trouble. When he talks about breaking the rules of the Congress to talk about gun or to stage the sit-in, he calls it good trouble.
Yeah. But the juxtaposition of John Lewis, who is a real hero in civil rights, and one of the leaders, certainly the leaders of the whole movement, and then Donald Trump, who was sued by the Justice Department for refusing to rent his apartments to African Americans.
Well, there's a special irony there in Trump attacking Lewis's district, you know, and doing the whole inner city thing. And, you know, he loves doing the racial coded thing whenever talking about a black leader. It's also the same events of the weekend with, you know, Steve Harvey and Ben Carson. Those are very ironic things, given that Trump's racial discrimination charges against him in the past come from housing discrimination, which is the major contributor to the same blight that he likes to cite and talk about. That's almost, it's something we sort of miss in the criticism here, is Trump was accused of being one of the direct contributors to that problem.
Mm-hmm. Ben, you've been spending a lot of time taking a look at Republicans in a big rush to repeal Obamacare, and they know that they could never get 60 votes, so they're finding a way they can do it through reconciliation, which would only require 51. Can they do it all through reconciliation? So many questions. And what are they going to repeal and replace? And if so, replace with what? So let's start with the reconciliation.
So what you can do with reconciliation, you can, and you have to do it over the course of a regular budget period. You only have 20 hours to debate it. You can alter, zero out, or increase anything that has been scored by CBO as having a number attached to it. So it can't be a zero or nothing. You know, it has to be spending or taxes, basically. So the things that are spending and taxes in the ACA are the Medicaid expansion, the subsidies and tax credits for people who purchase insurance individually, the taxes on device makers, on providers, and the mandates, and the Medicare taxes as well. Those are the things that can be touched. Stuff like the pre-existing conditions cannot be touched through reconciliation, which is actually the problem. Because if you take away, say, the individual mandate, which I think they're very keen to take away, if you take away subsidies, if you take away the Medicaid expansion, and you still have a pre-existing conditions requirement that insurers cannot bar people from having insurance based on pre-existing conditions or raise rates based on age and gender, then you have a situation where sicker people can purchase insurance at the moment they get sick. And then it becomes basically a run on the markets. It totally destabilizes the way health insurance works in the country.
Do they understand this?
Of course they do. And that's why we haven't yet. That's why I think there's so much reticence from Republicans to put forward a plan to, you know, the Trump and Paul are saying, you know, we want to do this in a way that we get the repeal and the replacement together, because that's the only way it's going to work. You have to have something. I imagine the replacement is looking more and more like, if they do go the full reconciliation, full get rid of Obamacare route, they have to get rid of the pre-existing conditions part of it via their replacement plan. And that's going to be very unpopular. So even a bit of a corner.
Right. And Donald Trump, in a phone interview, I guess it was with the Washington Post, right, over the weekend, says, no, we have a plan. I'm very close to my plan now. And it's going to be insurance for everybody. Well, I mean, if they do away with Obamacare, do away with the subsidies, which, what is it? I think 80% of people who bought insurance through the marketplace have a federal subsidy, which enables them to afford it, right? If they do away with the subsidies, how can you have insurance for everybody? How can they afford it?
Well, I mean, we're in the twilight zone right now, so I would not be surprised if Republicans did somehow come up with a universal coverage plan just to say it was theirs and not Democrats. But there really is no other way. There's no way to... I was thinking, you know, based on the previous comments last week when he said that he would come with a plan when Price was confirmed, that as Secretary of HHS, that the plan would look similar to Price's. And Price's plan in no way covers nearly all Americans. It would not extend our coverage much beyond the old employer Medicare.
Right. What we had before.
Yeah. That's
the problematic system that needed to be fixed.
Right. You would still have around 20% of Americans who are uninsured or underinsured, and that would be it. So there's no way to keep that promise, I think, and move towards the Ryan/Price privatized versions of healthcare. It's impossible. We'll be right back.
The Parting Shot with Bill Press. This is the Bill Press Show.
Well, you don't have to look far for the outrage of the day. No farther than Donald Trump's attack on Congressman John Lewis. Yeah, how dare he say that John Lewis is all talk and no action? Well, he wasn't all talk when he got bloodied up on the Edmund Pettus Bridge down in Selma. He wasn't all talk when he led congressional Democrats into a sit-in on the House floor last year because Republicans wouldn't do anything about gun safety legislation. And how dare he say that John Lewis's district is run down and crime-ridden? He represents one of the wealthiest parts of Atlanta, including the Atlanta International Airport. Now, John Lewis says he's not going to attend Donald Trump's inauguration because he doesn't think he's a legitimate president. Okay, you can agree or disagree with that. But that doesn't mean you launch an ugly personal attack against a genuine civil rights hero. I mean, that's like attacking Mother Teresa or Rosa Parks. And by the way, what's Donald Trump done about civil rights? Absolutely nothing. He was even sued by the Department of Justice for refusing to rent apartments to African Americans. And now he has the audacity to attack John Lewis. Donald Trump, when it comes to civil rights, Donald Trump doesn't deserve to shine John Lewis's shoes. I don't know about you, but this really pisses me off.
This is the Bill Press Show.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.